Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and today we're going to talk about bikes, bicycles, biking safety. And we have two very experienced guests joining us this morning. Jennifer Bunce is with Duke City Wheelmint Foundation, and Aaron Wester is with Bike ABQ, which is holding their bike swap this weekend. Thanks to both of you for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Elaine. I
wanted to start off, as I was prepping for this show, I was thinking about my early bicycle memories, and I was looking online at some images of the red Schwinn cruiser that I had in the 1980s when I was a little girl, and it was my favorite bike. I don't actually know what happened to that bike, but I have some very fond memories of it growing up in Santa Fe. And I wanted to start off with each of you. Could you share, Jennifer, first, your earliest bicycle memory?
So my Facebook avatar right now actually is me with my first bike, which I had gone and looked at in the store with my parents. And this was in, say, January. And I wanted a bike, right? And they're like, okay, that's a great bike. We'll get that for your birthday. Well, my birthday's in July.
Oh.
And so I thought I was going to have to wait till July. And so early in the morning on Valentine's Day, I get up. I'm all kind of bleary-eyed. And my mom says, your dog made a mess in the living room. You need to go clean that up. And I'm like, okay, Mom, you know, I'm all sleepy.
How old are you this time?
I was 10.
10.
And she's like, okay, go clean up that mess. I'm like, yeah, just a minute, Mom. And I go in there, and there is that bike. And it was a red three-speed Stingray. And I was thrilled. You know, you can only imagine, right? Because I thought I was waiting till July. I thought it was a dog mess. Whatever. And so I guess that was a portent of things to come or something. But that's my early bike memory.
What about you, Aaron? What's one of your early bike memories? And you know, what kind of bike was it? And what were you doing? Where were you?
Well, let's see. I think my first bicycle, and I don't recall the brand or anything, it was just pink and white, and I remember going to the store, getting the streamers for the handlebars.
I was going to ask, did it have streamers on the handlebars?
Yeah, it had the streamers and the little basket on the front, and it had the training wheels. And one of my earliest memories is trying to figure out how to ride the bicycle without training wheels. So we'd take one off, and then I would fall over that direction, and then take the other one off, and I would crash. And I will never forget the day that I first learned to ride the bicycle without the training wheels. And ever since then, it's been me and a bicycle.
What do you ride now?
I ride...
You probably have an assortment of bikes, I'm guessing.
Well, my main bicycle that I ride is a Raleigh Roadster, and that's a very unusual geometry of bicycle, and then I modified it, changed the handlebars out, changed it just to fit me, so that's what I ride now.
What about you, Jennifer?
Well, my sort of racing bike is a Leopard, a company in California. They custom painted it purple to go with our Duke City Wheelman colors. Mm-hmm. So,
which you are dressed in purple today, too.
I am dressed in purple. We're all about purple. So, but it's a great bike to ride. I have a lot of fun on that Leopard.
Talk to me a little bit about the advocacy work that you do with Duke City Wheelman. We've discussed a little bit this kind of eternal tension between the question of how cyclists can remain safe in a culture like ours where so many people drive cars. And the tension being that do we need more trails for cyclists, or do we need to raise awareness among people driving cars? Or talk to me a little bit about when you first began cycling advocacy, where you kind of stood on that debate about what was needed to prevent car and bike accidents.
So I started riding in Albuquerque more than 30 years ago, and there wasn't the same traffic issues and you know, congestion, things that lead to more negative events. And when I got into advocacy, it wasn't until the mid-2000s. And at that time, I was a lot more sort of generic about my approach. I really thought that, you know, the infrastructure was good, and of course cars and bikes, all those drivers need to be paying attention. And I think my views on it have changed a lot since I started doing advocacy work. And I really feel more now like there's a risk with infrastructure that is underappreciated. I think that...
Explain what you mean by infrastructure for folks who might not know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So infrastructure is the bike paths, which are actually not bike paths. They're really multi-use paths, and that's a really important distinction. And also bike lanes, things like the sort of failed attempt at having bike boxes here in Albuquerque.
Those are those areas at stoplights where there's a bicycle painted and there's a place for cyclists to sit at the light.
Right.
And the cars are supposed to sit back behind. Those are here in Albuquerque.
That's right. And they've actually mostly fallen into disrepair. But I, from all that I've read and all of my own experiences, really trying to closely evaluate the good and the bad of these changes, one of the risks that I feel that people don't appreciate is that you get a false sense of security from some of these infrastructure changes. You think, oh, well, bikes are supposed to be here, so therefore I don't have to be as on guard. And that, in turn, leads to more problems. And so I think that my approach to safer cycling is really that cyclists need to act and be treated as vehicles on the road. And, of course, then that implies that bicyclists stop at the lights and obey the stop signs and ride the right way with traffic and all kinds of other things that we see not happening every day. But I do think that is the safest way to proceed on a bicycle. If you are predictable and you signal your intentions well ahead of time and you're riding in a responsible fashion that motorists are somewhat used to because you are mimicking the way a car would drive, that those features come together to make you more safe.
We're talking about bicycles and cycling safety this morning on the KUNM Collin Show. We'd like to hear from you. The number to call locally in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. Do you have questions about how to be safe on your bicycle when you're riding in town, whether it's Albuquerque or Santa Fe or other locations in northern and central New Mexico? Do you have questions about what the rules are for cyclists, how they are different or the same from motorists? Again, the number 277-5866 is locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We take your emails, and that address is callinshow@kunm.org. And you can also post your comments online at kunm.org. Aaron, I want to ask you, what is your, when you ride, and I assume you ride in town a lot with the rally roadster that you were talking about, what is one of the top things on your mind when you're street riding as far as keeping yourself safe? What are you doing? What's the number one thing?
Well, one of the main things is making sure that drivers see me. I don't ride between cars. I make sure that I'm visible, and at the same time, I make sure that I'm not in the way.
Like, I've heard the advice of, like, you don't ride all the way over in the gutter because then it's almost like you're invisible, but
right.
Go ahead and let yourself ride out a little bit into a lane and so that you're actually taking up space, but that there's still the space for the car to go by also. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Right, yeah. Don't ride in the gutter, but also don't take the entire lane because then that just makes everyone mad. But find just a sort of happy median. I find about a foot and a half to 2 feet from the sidewalk, and then that's usually plenty of room for the cars. Of course, you get those who don't obey the 5 foot rule, and then you just sort of deal with that as it goes.
And explain what the 5 foot rule is.
The 5 foot rule is where drivers are supposed to give cyclists 5 feet on each side. So say you have a cyclist going down the road, the car driver is supposed to, if they can, swerve over just a little bit into the other lane to give the cyclist room.
Jennifer, is in your experience, how does this type of regulation, this type of statute, the 5 foot rule, play out on the ground?
Well, most people, I would venture to say, probably don't know that that's a city law. That's a city law here in Albuquerque, and it's also in Los Alamos. But otherwise in the state, motorists are just under the normal laws for passing, which says that you need to pass with a safe distance.
So not prescribed 5 feet specifically.
That's statewide, that's just it's sort of generic and left up to interpretation. I will say also that in Albuquerque, a cyclist is not required to ride any closer than 3 feet to the curb or an obstacle to their right. And that
meaning you have that 3 foot margin, that 2.5-3 foot margin that Aaron was talking
right.
about.
Right. And because you need a buffer, you need really a buffer on both sides. And when a cyclist can, say, on tramway, ride on the shoulder, they can put a buffer between themselves and cars to the left and still have adequate maneuverability to the right. Sometimes the shoulder is non-existent or is full of debris or is in such bad condition that you can't ride there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when that's the case, then as Aaron was saying, you need to move over, you need to move left. Because a vehicle in many traffic lanes will have to take the adjacent lane to pass you safely, you know, you really do belong more to the left than what most motorists
kind of
in
what we think of as the car lane.
As the traffic lane, because
mm-hmm.
there isn't enough room for a car to pass you with any kind of margin if everybody tries to stay in the same lane.
Right.
And that's something that I think a lot of people would do well to think more about.
Well, and I think about it you know, in a two-lane highway in a car, I mean, you do need to, when the striping is spotted and passing is allowed, you do actually have to pull into the oncoming traffic lane in order to pass other cars. Let's take a call from Charles in Albuquerque. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick statement that I'm a commuter. I ride 37 miles a day when I can to work. And I sincerely appreciate all of the bike lanes and bike trails that we have. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to make it to work on my bike in a safe manner. And I like what you guys are saying about bike safety today. I really appreciate that because I think it's all about education to the motorists and the cyclists out there. I noticed that you have posted a lot of pictures on your ABQ Bike Facebook page, the buses that have those billboards showing give them 3 feet or 5 feet, it's the law. I would like to see that on some of our buses and billboards here in the Albuquerque Metro. And one other brief statement is that my son is 17, and I can quote him as saying a couple weeks ago, is I've been pushing him to get his driver's license, and he's kind of reluctant. But he did state to me the other day, is, Dad, if I budget my time right, I can ride my bike anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me so proud that, I've kind of pushed that on him. And he agrees that, you know, he rides to school, he rides to the library, and I guess when he gets his job, he plans on riding to work, too.
Charles, let me ask you a quick question. The point that Jennifer was making about kind of her critique of some of the infrastructure, that it creates a false sense of security, what do you think about that kind of angle on bike boxes and bike boulevards like those that we have here in Albuquerque?
I agree with that. I think that it's continuing education to the public, making them aware of what do these stripes mean. You know, cyclists do have the right to be on these roads, especially the bike boulevards. I've been past many times taking that bike boulevard. You know, I kind of absorb the lane and try to maintain a speed that the motors can muster. But, you know, they still want to pass. You know, they want to go 30 miles an hour on these bike boulevards and don't realize that, you know, we have a right to be in that lane too, and that the speed limit is only 18 miles an hour through there.
Yeah, let me ask you, Jennifer, thank you for your call this morning, Charles. Jennifer, explain what the bike boulevard is, where it is, and what you understand about, you know, what it was intended to do, and how you see that either perhaps not being realized.
So the bike boulevard is on Central in the Knob Hill area. I think it goes from Washington all the way to University. And then it sort of jogs around and ends up downtown. Mountain is part of it.
And Silver by UNM is part of it, right?
Right. Originally, the thought was that the signage and the reduction in speed limit that happened would be phase one.
Because there are purple speed limit signs. So normally on these kind of smaller residential streets, you don't even see a speed limit sign because it's usually 25 miles an hour, right? And so on. In many of these areas, there are speed limit signs that are posted. They're purple, and they say 18 miles an hour, which is, of course, one of those speed limits that's like, wait, what? 18 miles an hour? That doesn't make any sense. So 18 miles an hour, is that the speed? What is the significance of 18?
I don't actually know how that got picked. And I know that it was supposed to be unusual and attention
to catch your attention, right?
And why 18 as opposed to 17 or some other number, I don't know. But it was supposed to be attention getting. And so that was phase one. And what needed to follow were other phases that would have included things like maybe flipping some of the stop signs.
What does that mean, flipping?
When you're on a bike boulevard as a cyclist, you might expect that there wouldn't be a stop sign every other street and that you'd have more of a thoroughfare.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, that would have made it better for the bicyclists. However, that also then encourages motorists perhaps to drive on the street and to drive at a higher rate of speed.
A little faster, yeah.
And so then the discussion went to speed bumps, traffic circles, other kinds of things that could be put in place to keep the speed down and really discourage motorist traffic while it encouraged bicycle traffic. And so that's really the point of a bike boulevard. It's an ill-defined term, right? There's no set of guidelines or recommendations. It's a difficult sort of thing to get to work, especially because you have to consider the neighborhoods and what businesses and the on-street parking on Silver in the Knob Hill in the University area is a real difficult factor to have on a bike boulevard. If you want to know what the door zone is, go outside and open your door and stand so that you could ride your bike past the door, right, and not get hit when somebody opened it without looking, because that happens all the time. And so that we call that the door zone. So a cyclist should not be riding in the door zone. But if you have curb parking on both sides of the street,
it's hard not to.
Then you move out 2 or 3 feet to be out of the door zone, and you've got the cyclist right in the lane of traffic. And it really is a difficult situation for everybody, because cyclists don't necessarily go 18, and they have every right to be there, but motorists don't always get that. And on the bike boulevard, unfortunately, what I've seen is a lot of cyclists blowing through the stop signs without even being prepared to yield to traffic. And, you know, as a cyclist, you're responsible for that. If you blow through that stop sign and a car hits you, it's your fault. And that's going to come as a rude shock to some people. Oh, I'm on a bike boulevard, I should, you know, whatever. But it's not the case.
We're talking about bicycles and cycling safety today. We'd like to hear from you. The number to call is 277-5866, locally here in Albuquerque. You can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also post comments online at kunm.org or email call-in show at KUNM.org. Jennifer Bunce is with the Duke City Wheelman Foundation, and Aaron Wester is with Bike ABQ. And we'll have some more information about the bike swap event that's starting up today and tomorrow and then takes place this weekend here in Albuquerque. We're going to take a quick break, and we've got full phone lines, so we'll be right back with your calls.
Thanks to a quick response by KUNM listeners, we finished the Spring Pledge Drive successfully. The Santa Fe International Folk Art Market and Lobo Scooter donated prizes as incentives. Flying Star, House of Bread, Whiting Coffee, and La Montanita Co-op provided food for everyone who came in to answer phones. Thanks. Now we have resumed our regular programming. If you missed the drive but would still like to donate or see our special web thank you gifts, click Support This Station at KUNM.org.
Support comes from Visit Denver, with an opportunity to plan a Memorial Day weekend in the Mile High City, with art festivals, soccer games, water parks, and Denver Day of Rock on Saturday, May 25th. Getaway information at visitdenver.com.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Do you commute to work on a bike? Do you want to? Or are bicycles mainly something that you do for fun? Or perhaps bicycles are something that you want to do for fun? We're taking your calls this morning on the KUNM Call-In Show. Let's go to Ronald in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ronald. You're on the air.
Hey there. So I've been commuting to work or school for, let's see, I started when I was in third grade. And I'm 53, so that's a while.
That is a while.
And I was thought I was going to be so impressive how far I go, but Charles beat me. I only do 30 miles. I did 5,000 last year commuting. And this infrastructure in this town is wonderful. I love the underpasses they put on the Northern Diversion Canal bikeway, so I don't have to stop for those roads. I'm just finishing my commute right now.
I was going to say, you sound like you're on your bike right now.
I'm walking now, so I won't have the wind so hard. Mm-hmm. But a couple of things. We're talking about the infrastructure. A while back, I was riding in the painted lane going downhill on Indian School, and a bicyclist on the bike route on the multi-purpose lane blew through the stop sign, and I almost ran over the bicyclist on my bicycle. And I had the right-of-way. And she muttered something about her brakes don't work. Safety, your brakes got to work. And still talking about make sure you're being seen. I've got a flashing headlight. Costs about $50. So when I'm riding in the bike lane going down lead, doing 25 miles, 30 miles an hour, I don't have somebody not see me and pull out in front of me by accident.
Thanks.
And last thing is at corners, you really got to watch. I got off my bike and took a crosswalk. I had the crosswalk for walking permission. It came on, and somebody immediately took a right where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was walking. So you got to watch, you got to watch. When I'm at the big intersections, I make sure I get out in the middle of the road so the people who want to take the rights can go on my right side, and I'm out of everybody's way.
Thanks for your call, Ronald. Let me go to you, Aaron. So you were talking about being seen, and Ronald mentioned blinking lights. What are some of the other tools that riders use to make themselves more visible in addition to the positioning that we've discussed? I'm thinking about the reflective gear, or, you know, talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, some gear that cyclists use to be seen are headlights, blinking red taillights, the reflective vests, usually safety orange, reflective leg bands, and anything that you can use that's reflective. I've seen some cyclists have reflective patches all over their backpack. I've seen some put reflective material on their helmets, but you don't want to be obnoxious with it, like have two or three headlights, and then you have to be really careful where you point the headlights, because you don't want to blind oncoming cars.
Is there anything to add, Jennifer?
So the free way of being seen, absolutely free, is wave. Do a lot of communication with motor vehicle drivers, with other cyclists. You can wave, you can whistle. I try to, you know, keep my waves to not the one-fingered variety. but I have had incredibly good response since I started doing that a number of years ago. And that's only increased in the years that I've been working in advocacy. You can't rely on what you think is eye contact. You really need to wave and make sure that it's a big gesture to get their attention.
When I started riding a bike here in Albuquerque about 10 years ago, when I first moved down to Albuquerque from Santa Fe, I found myself in my car becoming much more active in my communication with people on bicycles, literally exactly as you're saying, like wanting to be like, I see you, go. You know, don't assume that I see you. I'm going to tell you that I see you. Erin.
One other thing I just thought of is a bell on the handlebars. When you're on a multi-use trail and you're passing a walker or another cyclist, it's really nice to have a bell because sometimes they're wearing headphones and they can't hear a voice, but the bell cuts through everything. And there's been numerous occurrences where my family and I have been riding and people are really happy that we use the bell. Let them know where we are.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take another call. Anne in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine. Boy, this is a really interesting program. I learned to ride a bike when I was a little girl. I was about 4 in England, and I rode all the time I was there. At one point, I had to ride my bike to the station, take 2 trains, and walk at the other end to get to school. When I ended up in Albuquerque, I didn't ride because I live in a neighborhood where, you know, it was quite a distance for me to get to work. My children both rode. But I am very conscious of cyclists. What Erin just said about a bell, I walk on the bike path on tramway, and sometimes I walk, you know, early in the morning, and a bell would just freak me out. What I want is when a cyclist comes by me is just to say, on your left, and I'll say, hi, and he says, hi, and we're good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If somebody, and I don't wear earbuds, I don't have the radio on, I'm just walking. If somebody whizzes by me and I am shocked, I will say to them, on your right, because I need to know. The idea of waving is excellent. I had a cyclist the other day. He was in the bike lane. I was in the right turn lane. The light was green. I waited for him to go through. He never looked at me. I thought, what if I decided to go? I watch for bikes. I watch for them. I try and give them room. It means also watching the oncoming traffic, the lane to my left, you know, so that I can give them enough room. And one thing that your people haven't said is that when you're riding, I mean, if you're on a mountain bike, the tires are pretty tough. If you're on one of those racing bikes, you have to be careful of the gravel that's on the side of the road. You can't just sort of pull over a little bit further, get out of the way of the traffic, because then there's gravel and it could damage your tires.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think more consciousness of each other, and I love waving, saying hello, just, you know, making some sort of connection always helps.
Thanks for your call, and let's take another call from Judith in Albuquerque. Good morning, Judith. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you, Elaine. Can you hear me?
I can. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yes, I am.
Could you please pick up the handset? We'll hear you better that way.
Oh, I wanted my husband to hear you. Okay. Hold on. There we go.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oops. There we go. 2 things. I live near the university. We have stop signs, and we have bike trail lines. And I questioned a pair of cyclists. Why were they riding tandem? Is that illegal? Because we have narrow streets.
You mean tandem like they were riding next to each other?
I don't know if there's a ruling about it or not, and I'm checking with you and your guest, please.
Got it. Jennifer.
But then the stop signs, I see several. I've only seen one cyclist actually stop at a stop sign in the last 6 months.
Jennifer, is there any prohibition? And I'm guessing, Judith, when you talk about riding tandem, you're talking about 2 bikes riding next to each other and therefore being even wider.
In the bike path, and the second one is usually on the white
lane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jennifer.
So that is an incredibly difficult situation. Cyclists are, by law, allowed to ride two abreast. And when a bike lane is so narrow that you can't, you know, then you have to use your judgment. If there's not much traffic, riding two abreast is fine. It actually, personally, I find it incredibly irritating that we allow two abreast and we don't make bike lanes wide enough to enact that safely. I view the white line as a very dangerous zone. I would recommend that a cyclist either be on the shoulder or in the lane, but not on the white line, because then a motorist is likely to think they can pass you with enough clearance when they really probably can't. So it's a very difficult thing. The stop sign issue, like I said before, if bicyclists aren't prepared to yield to traffic, they may not come to a full and complete stop, which is not exactly in compliance with the law, but that is different than just blowing through stop signs.
Slowing way, way, way down before a stop sign and
treating it as a yield.
A rolling stop, in a sense.
Yeah.
Right? Let's take another call. Lisa in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. I've ridden and my children ride, and, you know, I was a commuter for a long time, and now because of the nature of my job, I'm having to hustle from one end of town to the other, so I'm using a car more. And quite frankly, I see it from both sides. But one of the things I really think would help bicycle safety, motorcycle safety, scooter safety, is if you would fail the driver's test, the written test, if you didn't know what rights bicycles have on the road. I mean, right now you have a whole lot of people who think that bikes are supposed to get out of your way. They think that bikes are supposed to be on the sidewalk, and it's not safe to be riding on a sidewalk. In fact, a lot of the time when you think you're on a bike and you're in a safer area, you're actually in a more dangerous area. People don't look for bikes on the sidewalk. People on the sidewalk, pedestrians, go about 4 miles an hour if they're running. If they're walking, they're much slower, more like one or two. On a bicycle, going slow on a sidewalk, you're going 9 miles an hour. You're going twice as fast, and people in cars aren't going to see you. The only time I've ever been hit by a car, I was on the sidewalk. Okay? The only time my son was hit by a car, he was in a marked-off lane that he thought was safe because cars wouldn't drive in the marked-off lane. Not true. He was hit by a car that came up from behind him in a marked-off lane and clipped his handlebar and threw him on the ground and gave him a major concussion. I've had people be incredibly rude to me while I've been on a bike, you know, throw things at me, even though they were going the opposite direction and, you know, rural road that didn't matter to anybody. You know, I think it's interesting that the consequences when you hit a cyclist are so minor, even if you were breaking the law when you hit them. If I were to go out on the street and wave a gun around, I'd get arrested, my gun would be confiscated, I would not get it back, and, you know, I'd spend some jail time, I'd get a fine, I'd have to go to court. But you have people who literally are passing in a no-passing zone, swerve back onto the shoulder, kill somebody, and get to go home without, you know, virtually no consequences. And I think that that's something that gives people the wrong message about, you know, the seriousness of hitting a bicycle. It should be more serious to hit a bicycle than it is, you know. You should have more consequences for that than, say, you know, some of these misdemeanors that people get thrown in jail for.
Yeah.
And that's just wrong.
Thank you for your call, Lisa. Let's go to another call. Paula, in Albuquerque, you had a question about sidewalks.
Yes. Your last caller touched on that briefly. I live in the Nob Hill neighborhood, which is a very dense neighborhood with lots of skateboarders and bicyclists and lots of pedestrians. And so many bicyclists ride on the sidewalk here, which I find very dangerous to me as a pedestrian walking my dogs. I'm always in fear of them rounding the corners, like your last caller said, about 9 miles an hour. And I'm wondering, what are the rules about bicyclists using the sidewalks, and why is it so prevalent here in Albuquerque?
Jennifer, are the rules in Albuquerque different than the rules statewide?
I think that the one thing that's different here in Albuquerque than statewide is that if a cyclist must ride on the sidewalk because they absolutely do not feel they can be safe on the street, then they need to ride with traffic on the sidewalk. In other words, sidewalks are directional for bicyclists. Statewide,
so on the right side going that direction, on the left side going that direction,
right,
and not vice versa.
Right. You're not supposed to ride, in effect, against traffic on the sidewalk. One of the other things is that that bicyclists are required by law to yield to pedestrians. A bicyclist actually is required by law to walk their bike in a crosswalk, and pedestrians always have the right of way. But those things are not necessarily. And one other thing that the caller said, the last caller said, that, you know, it is really more unsafe on the sidewalk. Nobody's looking for you.
Meaning on a bike, it's less safe with respect to cars.
Right, because they're not looking for you. If they're going to pull out or turn across a driveway and you're coming, they are absolutely not looking for you. So if you're going to choose to ride the sidewalk, which is not recommended, you need to probably go much slower and be extremely cautious at every driveway.
But it's not prohibited.
It's not strictly prohibited.
But pedestrians have the right of way.
And it's not recommended either in the law.
Okay. Let's take another call. Chris in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I've been a long time, over 20-year commuter in Albuquerque for about 8 years, but also in different parts of California and Pacific Northwest. And I think in Albuquerque here, especially when you look at our city bike maps, we have a great plan going on paper. But if you're a longtime commuter, you know that that's not the case on the road, as Lisa pointed out with a lot of her great salient points. When we have a dedicated bike-only lane up off of the edge of Paseo, elevated by a number of feet and great distance, and yet vehicles can drive so fast and recklessly as to go off the road, through the barricades, and kill a cyclist, we have problems of public education and law enforcement as well, when incidences against cyclists are not taken as seriously as incidences against other drivers. We have an issue with public education and law enforcement as well. Basically, as a cyclist here commuting, you have to ride like you have a target on your back. You have to always be looking over your shoulder, not wearing headphones, constantly paying attention to everything, and assuming that cars are king at all times, because this is Route 66 mother road here. Very heavy-duty car culture. It's getting bike-friendlier, but you really do need to take a lot of personal responsibility as a cyclist. I use stop signs as an instance to track stand. That's staying clipped into your pedals and coming to a complete dead stop and practicing your balance.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you great control over your bike and will make you a more competent cyclist in dicey situations. And it also gets the respect of drivers when you don't blow through stop signs. I also think the proliferation of fixed-gear bikes on the road as commute bikes leads to a lot more riders for whom a fixed-gear bike is their first bike and doesn't give them as much control, maybe a bike without even any brakes on it, and forces riders into a style where they basically do not want to and mechanically are not as readily able to stop immediately and dart in traffic.
I didn't even realize that bikes exist without brakes. I mean, other than dysfunctional brakes. But thanks so much for your call, Chris. That has certainly scrambled my brain a little bit. I'm just trying to imagine cycling without brakes, and I'm just not going to go there. I'm not going to take myself there in my mind. Jennifer, is that prevalent?
Well,
folks that ride bikes with no brakes?
If you have a fixed gear means that you can't freewheel and you only have one speed.
Uh-huh.
And so the way that you slow down on a fixed gear is you backpedal. But as the caller pointed out, it's not really possible to backpedal and stop as quickly as you can with brakes. I have ridden a fixed gear around quite extensively at times in the past, but I always had brakes because I just wasn't willing to trust that mm-hmm. I would be able to respond in traffic appropriately. So it is something to consider. It kind of goes against the whole fixed gear coolness factor if you have brakes, but your safety is really more important than your coolness factor.
let's take another call from Jeff in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jeff. You're on the air.
Good morning, Elaine. Thanks for taking my call. An important show on a great topic, and I really loved your first question for Jennifer and Lisa about their first bikes. And my question is really around, how do we inspire kids to be the next generation of commuters to schools and eventually their jobs? Schools today are designed around SUV drop-off and pickup lines, and you see very few kids riding bikes. And when you look at the culture of parents feeling their children are unsafe and vulnerable to riding bikes around neighborhoods, we just don't see, I think, what we experienced as kids of the joy of getting out and the independence of riding a bike. Obesity, ADD, and all the environmental challenges, I think, are helped by getting kids out and riding bikes. So what can we do beyond adults and getting them to ride and commute, but getting kids to be more enthusiastic, recreational, and commuters?
Erin, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, there is a program that's Safe Routes to Schools programs that Bike ABQ is involved with. And from what I understand, it's really important and teaches kids how to be safe. There's a lot of different things that you can teach the kids, and it's just the manner of presenting it to them. We also help with giving helmets to kids at bike rodeos. And so I think we're really trying to work on that. It's just difficult trying to figure out all the logistics about it.
Jennifer, you have thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the kid factor is hard because it's kind of right now against peer pressure, or against that is an anti-coolness factor thing for a child maybe. So I think that parent encouragement, Safe Routes to School creates a group that the children belong to that ride or walk to school, and so that's a really positive feature. This summer, Duke City Wheelmen will be offering skills clinics for families, and those will be special for parents to come with their children, and then the parent and the child can learn the same rules and the same best practices together. And that kind of situation will better equip everybody to use their bike to get around.
And consistency with knowledge in families, I guess, yeah.
I think that's really important, the consistency within the family, so the parent and the child are on the same page. And I also look at these clinics, which will be offered for adults and for women only, as opportunity for cyclists to become more consistent in their behavior. And I feel that we have an opportunity, an untapped opportunity, to sort of instruct motorists on the road. If more cyclists could come to agreement on best practices, more motorists would become used to that, and it would smooth over interactions. And that's a gradual process, but it's free. It's something we can take charge of. We as cyclists can do. And so I think that that's a real opportunity for us here in Albuquerque to find ways to work together as cyclists, and then have that spill over into working with motorists.
And these classes are also, motorists could come take these classes too as a way of learning the perspective of a cyclist. If you're not a cyclist, but you want to be aware of what cyclists know or do, or these kinds of attempts to develop best practices across the community, that's another thing that you had mentioned to me also, right?
That's right. I would encourage anybody who's interested in just the motorist-cyclist interaction part of the situation to come. And if there was interest, I would also be happy to offer something just really geared towards motorists.
We do have a link posted to the Duke City Wheelmen Foundation website at KUNM.org, and also a link to the Bike ABQ Bike Swap website, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with your calls and information about the Bike Swap event that's taking place here in Albuquerque this weekend. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We'll be right back.
Eventua, Santa Fe's new performance series presented by Theater Grotesco and the Center for Contemporary Arts, continues with Faustwerk Mask Theater, April 25th through 28th. Then the Eventua finale with Cole B. Wilson's Make Away H. Thunderbolt and Cheryl's The Big Hoot, May 3rd and 4th. Tickets and info at 505-474-8400 or visit theatergrotesco.org. A message from the tax-exempt Theater Grotesco.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about bicycles and cycling safety today. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Jennifer Bunce is with the Duke City Wheelman Foundation, and Aaron Wester is with Bike ABQ, which is holding a bike swap event this weekend. I want to go quickly to a few more calls, and for callers, if you can make your comments as succinct as possible, that means I can get more of you on the air this morning. Sarah in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. We do the bicyclists commute a lot through the city, inside the city, which means that they cross major intersections. Is there any effort on the Bike ABQ community to bring back our red light cameras at our big, giant intersections for bicycle and pedestrian safety?
Jennifer, bring back red light cameras. Are you working on that?
No, that pretty much got voted down by City Council, and I don't see that coming back. Unfortunately, I understand people's objections, but I do think that it helped. We don't have enough police on the streets to enforce, to do the same job as those cameras were doing. It's a tough thing.
Let's take another call. Tom in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning.
What was your comment or question? Go ahead.
I had two questions. One is about the Bike Boulevard in Silver, and it just seems half done. And I wasn't sure if, you know, the painting that we're painting of the bicycle logo on the road is ever going to get finished. And beyond that, it seems like the stop signs need to get flipped to make that a useful thing to do. That's one comment. And the second part is about the bike that...
I'm going to just hold you to that one comment because we're close on the end of time. Jennifer, is the Bike Boulevard that we've been discussing, is it completed?
It is really not completed, but I do not believe that it's on anybody's radar as far as making those phase two or phase three changes.
What are the additional changes that were part of the project as far as you understand?
It would have been considering flipping stop signs and then putting in deterrents for motorists to go too fast.
Okay. Let's go to Mel in Corrales. Good morning, Mel. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just would like to... ask the folks there to point out to pedestrians on rural roads that common sense and New Mexico traffic regulations require them to walk on the left side of the road against the traffic, not with the traffic. And that's the same whether there's a bike lane or not. That's all.
Thank you, sir. So that's kind of in contradiction to the... traffic direction rules for cyclists on sidewalks that we were discussing a little bit earlier, but that pedestrians who are walking on shoulders are expected to walk against oncoming traffic so they can be seen easier? Is that the...
That is part of state law. Pedestrians should walk opposing traffic. Because bicycles are defined as a vehicle on the road, then they should ride with traffic.
Got it. And then folks who are walking against, and you would see the oncoming cyclists also.
That's right.
Okay. We have one last caller this morning, Krista in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hello. I wanted to address one of your guests' comments about bike lanes giving a false sense of security here in New Mexico. And what I've been frustrated in doing some community planning work in the past is that the model that I've seen work in Montreal, Canada, is that the bike lane is next to the sidewalk, and then there's a physical curb, and then there's a car parking, and then there's auto traffic. And I realize that takes a wide right-of-way, but it seems like even the bike advocacy groups won't put that on the table as part of long-term planning for roads, say, like Rio Grande Boulevard.
Jennifer, your thoughts on that? That sounds like a significant level of infrastructure, a car lane, a parking area for cars, then a curb, then a bike lane, then the sidewalk.
So it's very difficult whenever you put parallel parking next to a bike lane, because then you've got a door zone basically into the bike lane. Constitution is a perfect example.
On the passenger side.
Right. Constitution's a perfect example of that. So one of the things about that whole situation is that the most common cause of a problem or a crash is an intersection, not a crash because you get hit from behind. And so although you might feel more safe riding in a bike lane that was separated by some sort of barrier, it would go away at the intersection, and then you would again be vulnerable and in the most likely place to have a problem. So what really works, I believe, is the education that many people have commented on and the awareness that really needs to be in place to protect all road users, because intersections are the most vulnerable.
So with all that discussion of bikes and cycling safety, Aaron, I want to finish up with you today. The Bike ABQ Bike Swap, it takes place on Saturday, but the event actually starts today. Explain how it works. You can't just show up on Saturday with a bike you want to get rid of, right?
Right. How it works is today and tomorrow, you bring items you want to check into the swap, anything bicycle related.
So gear, clothes, bicycles, anything, right?
Anything, yeah. Mm-hmm. Except for helmets. We will not accept any helmets.
Why?
Because over time, the foam degrades, and we're not sure of how old they are, if they've been crashed before. And so it's just a huge liability that we really can't handle right now.
No used bike helmets, but everything else is on the table.
Yeah.
So you bring in your stuff today or tomorrow, and then what happens?
Well, you bring in your stuff between 10 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. today and tomorrow. You bring your items to the check-in stations.
And we've got information posted online at KUNM.org with more, but keep going with the process.
All right. Well, you bring your items to check in. If you're not sure of the price that you want or you can get for it, we have appraisers that can help you price them. Then they'll direct you to a check-in table where volunteers will tag your items, take them, and store them. Then you will pay a $1 per tag fee for each tag, and then you're done.
And then you're done. And then on Saturday, all of these items are then available for purchase.
Right. Starting at 10 a.m., that's when the sale opens. We get hundreds of bicycles in. We get tons of parts, components, accessories. Anything you're looking for, pretty much, we'll have.
So if you know what you're looking for, obviously, you'll be able to go find what you want. If you don't know what you're looking for, are there folks around to help you figure out, like, which bike is the right size for me, or which, you know, for folks who are maybe newer to the cycling community?
Absolutely. We will have people there who are experienced with sizing the bicycles. They'll be able to help you find exactly what you're looking for. And yeah, anything we can do to help you find what you're looking for, we'll help you out.
Great. Jennifer, any last comments?
The Bike Swap is an excellent place to trade up for your growing child.
To get a bigger bike for that kid.
Yeah, that is the hot spot for that particular thing.
Very nice. Jennifer Bunce is with the Duke City Wheelman Foundation. Aaron Wester is with Bike ABQ, and the Bike Swap takes place this weekend with check-in today and tomorrow. You can find more information about both of these organizations and links to their website online at KUNM.org. If you missed the show, we'll post the audio in just a few minutes, and you can either podcast that or stream it live online. You can find other call-in shows also online at KUNM.org. Thanks so much for joining us. Engineering today by Marshall Broyles. Andy Lyman assisted with production, and Michael Hess screened your calls. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we'll be back next Thursday morning at 8 o'clock for the KUNM Call-In Show here on KUNM.